WBSM presents The Tim Weisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Weisberg Show.
Now we are joined by a very special guest. We are lucky to have her on the show. Some people would give their right arm for the privilege. Please welcome Nell Campbell, a.k.a. Little Nell, who played Columbia in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm very, very well, and I'm so excited to be coming to Providence, Rhode Island, because, first of all, I've been there once before, but I have relatives that are going to come to the show, my sister-in-law and her husband, so it's like a family affair. So I'm really excited to be there, and I hear it's going to be a great audience, and I hear the shadow cast is fantastic. So it's going to be thrilling. You know, I will bring Transylvania to you.
Oh, and we are ready for it. And you know what's great about this is that, you know, Providence has always been a great community. The whole idea of, you know, Rhode Island and southeastern Massachusetts has always been a great community to embrace Rocky Horror. They love all the different performances that happen here.
Well, I obviously, in my view, Massachusetts is one of the more sophisticated states of America. That just goes without saying. I'm sure that's a general, not everyone knows that, correct?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly feel that way, even if everybody else doesn't realize it. We certainly feel we're among the more enlightened.
I think that's how I think of it. I mean, and so it's fantastic. By that, I mean, let's face it, a lot of America is a big old Bible belt of conservatives, and it's the children of those people that Rocky Horror has meant so much to. Because if you're born into a conservative family, and if whether you're, it doesn't necessarily mean if you're struggling to come out with your sexuality, which whatever that may be. I'm just woken up, but I am going to make a point here. The fact is that I think of, because I adore Boston, and I adore, it's just everything I know about Massachusetts, I think you're very go ahead, you know, forward-thinking modern people, as opposed to if I was going into the middle of Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And so my point, as I ramble here, as I've just woken up, after finally being able to sleep past 5 a.m. to jump on an airplane on this tour, which, by the way, has been a hoot, I'm trying to say that I think of you as a forward-thinking state. I'm generalizing. You're obviously a democratic state. And so I'm even more excited that, you know, there are so many fans there, and I know that we've got fantastic numbers coming, and I'm really, really excited, because I can't tell you how much it means to me that the Rocky Horror Picture Show nearly 50 years on has been such a adored, loved, appreciated, and in so many cases, in, you know, life-changing and life-affirming film. So I'm just the lucky duck that was tap dancing on a tabletop when I was supposed to be waiting tables in a cafe when Jim Sharman and Richard O'Brien and Richard Hartley walked in and saw me. And the director, Jim Sharman, just looked, took one look at me and turned to Richard O'Brien and said, there's your servant for the show. Because originally he'd only had one servant, but he wanted to, he said, Jim said you needed two more to be backup vocals and harmony. Because Mary Wollstonecraft, Frankenstein, only has one servant, as you know, the Hunchback. So he, Richard had just written Riff Raff in it. So yes, kids, you go out there and show off and you never know what's going to happen. I was a 19-year-old boofer who was supposed to be waiting the tables, but I decided to show them my stuff. And not by them, I just mean any old person in the cafe having a coffee or whatever. And it's a bit like Lana Turner being discovered at the as a soda jerk. I too was actually a soda jerk at that cafe, which was highly sophisticated in 1973 to serve a banana split because nothing American had really travelled over.
Is it true? I was going to ask: is it true too that around that time too you were also selling clothes in Kensington Market next to Freddie Mercury?
That's right. I certainly was. He would arrive each day wearing yet tighter trousers than the day before in fantastic colours. And he wore those, you know, high wedgy boots with stars and rainbows and things on them. And we'd drink our tea out of polystyrene cups, and he would always be eating these jam donuts that the English love, which, you know, that are covered in sugar. I mean, they're just disgusting, with fake cream in them. But everyone used to eat them in those days, not me. And he would be, you know, sipping his tea and eating one of these ghastly buns. And I thought, where does it go, Freddie? Where does it go in the skin-tight outfit he'd always be wearing? Well, the trousers, anyway. And he would be banging on about trying to get a record deal for this band of his. And I would tell him, sensibly, Freddie, keep your day job because it's very hard to make in this business.
It worked out kind of okay for him, though.
The rest is royal history. What a talent. I still think he should have had his teeth done myself. I don't think that would have affected his voice at all. But what a, you know, incredible original he was. Adored by everybody behind the scenes, I mean, as well.
So, listeners,
I just want your listeners to realize that I am speaking to you after waking up banging from the longest sleep I've had in months.
That's okay
and,
by me.
I'm in a sort of hysterical gaga state of, trying to string a word together. But I've got my tea coming up. I'm in a hotel in Winnipeg. How much do you love the name Winnipeg?
Oh, I'm a big fan of that area, yeah. Manitoba, Canada.
I told our driver to Winnipeg. I think the name is so divine. And I said, as long as it's not Winnie Mandala, I mean, it's just fabulous, Winnipeg. Anyway, that's gone down like a lead balloon at dawn. It feels like dawn. So I'm making an exotic tea here in glorious Winnipeg. And so listen up, you darlings that are listening. I cannot tell you the fun we are having each night during this sort of having this, I'll call it a show because it is a show. You can come and meet and greet me first, which has been an absolute treat to meet and talk with the fans about, you know, how long they've been watching it and what it means to them. And it's just heaven because I've had them from 5 years old to, you know, 55 years old and or more, to my own contemporaries. And I'm 155 years old. And then, I mean, last night, here we are in the wilds of the flatlands of Winnipeg. And we had nearly 1,000 people in the audience. And we had, I think there was must have been over 100 people in the fancy dress competition. I had to get very strict with them and get all the Columbias to come forward and we'd vote because I get the audience to help me vote, which is the best one. If there's that many, I sort of break it down to characters. Anyway, so it's an absolute hoot and a holler and the shadow cast are magnificent. And, you know, having, you know, that those vast numbers of people in a theatre all, you know, lighting their, turning their phone torches on and putting newspaper over their head and throwing whatever it is they throw. Each state seems to have a legal rule. And it's just a great experience. Last night I was so excited I ended up joining in the time warp.
Well, you know, they use the term cult classic. They say that this, you know, the Rocky Horror Picture Show actually kind of defines the term cult classic, but I think it goes beyond that. It's more than just a cult. It's part of Americana because people, it's a rite of passage almost to go and, you know, go for the first time and have the V put on your head and learn how to take part and then go back when you know how to do everything and get even more involved. It becomes something
but
that...
darling, it's not... Sorry, I've interrupted. Carry on.
No, go ahead.
Saying.
Go ahead.
No, go on. I mean, everything you say is true, but on top of that, it is it's global, not just America. I mean, they're doing all of this in Japan, England, Australia, everywhere. Of course, you do it best.
Well, we appreciate
Americans
that.
Have really got it down, and I do a one-woman show, which I hope to be bringing to you in Rhode Island next year, called All's Nell That Ends Nell, where I tell people about how it all came together, the Rocky Horror Show, and then the film the following year, and which is actually very unusual if you think about it. And I'm only now just thinking about it, 50 years on. A year later from a musical being made, that they made the film. I mean, have they made the film of the Book of Mormon?
Have they made
the film of Rent? Have they made the film of... Well, they did make the film of Hamilton, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen it, though. Anyway, my point being, in 1973, for someone to see to go to a theatre and see a show in... It was the smallest theatre in London. It was a 60-seater. And on the second night, a man came to this tiny theatre for this new musical where the songs had been written as the rehearsal went along. Richard wrote at least a third of the songs at the request of the director. Now, write something for Janet to express her discovering her sexuality. And he would go home and write, you know, come back the next day with Touch You, Touch You, Touch Me, which the actress performing the role refused to sing at first. She was so shocked. Don't you love it? Julie Covington.
Wow.
Such a talent. But she was shocked by it. Anyway, I can see that I'm banging on, but it's all... Anyway, my show tells all the, you know, behind the scenes of the show, which became the film, and then what happened to the film, and then so it became a cult. But I do think I'm someone slightly obsessed by hearing about the details of cults, but I think we're about the only good cult, right?
That, you know, you're probably right about
I
that.
I mean, cults, yeah. I see all religion as cults, but I mean that in the nicest possible way. But I do think that the people calling, it's funny how they call them cult. I guess it's the one thing that creates a lot of people are drawn to it and suddenly find themselves dressed, grown men suddenly wanting to dress themselves as maids. And then they want to dress themselves in fishnets and a corset and very, very high heels. I mean, it's just magical, the effect it has on people.
And it's just
wonderful to see so many people enjoying themselves night after night. I just love it.
I was going to say a cult normally is about, you know, people telling other people how to live their life and what to do. And the cult of Rocky Horror is the opposite of that. It's about letting your freak flag fly. It's about being who you are and who you feel you are. And now, you know, approaching 50 years now of this phenomenon, we are in a time where people are finally feeling comfortable being who they really are. And then Rocky Horror plays a big part in that for them.
Well, it's been it seems to have helped so many people make that transition, and that's why it is so meaningful to me that that's what our fan base is. I mean, I can't think of any other film that has affected people in the most brilliant way that Rocky Horror has, you know, liberated so many. And I hear their stories. And the number of, for instance, grandmothers that appear very conservative in their dress, whatever, and they will come up, I'll come to the meet and greet, and they'll say to me, and this happened last night, it's happened almost every night that someone says, I can't tell you. They'll almost be shaking as they tell me, they'll say, I can't tell you how much this film helped me get through my college years, my teenage years and early year. I can't, you know, and I mean, it just never ceases to amaze me that it has had that effect on so many, and my gratitude that I'm part of it, because I was just that happy, you know, hooper on top of a restaurant table when I was cast. But I just love that it, you know, it just is such a profound, has had such a profound effect, because that Richard O'Brien, when he was putting it together, had absolutely no idea. He just wanted people to have a good old knees up. So this has all been, you know, the massive fresh whipped cream on top of the cake, which just goes on forever. In fact, it is the cake.
So this is happening this Thursday, October 24th at the Strand in Rhode Island. Doors open at 7 p.m. The show at 8 p.m. VIP meet and greet tickets available, where you'll actually will get the chance to meet Nell Campbell, and you'll get a chance to take a photograph and get an autograph and all of that. And as you said, you get the chance to really meet the people who have had this affect them. But then you also get to have fun with the audience as well. Does it ever get old for you at all to hear these things? Because
It surprises me how it never gets old. I mean, I was sitting watching the movie last night, and The Shadow. I don't always do that, but it's funny. Even I can find that movie very beguiling.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, all the little details, because most of us had never made a movie before. So, and we were taking out, you know, theatre roles to the big screen, and how each of us, you know, whether we played it big or whether we played it, you know, way smaller. And Richard O'Brien's performance as Riff Raff, you know, he's so menacing and understated. Anyway, I just think everybody in the film is so terrific. It's just, you know, I know I never get tired of it, but so, I'm so sorry to be rambling to you all. I'm really so much more articulate usually. Ha, ha.
Oh, no. We love just hearing from you, and we're looking forward to when you come back and we can really dive into, you know, hearing you tell these stories. But before we let you go, again, this is happening this Thursday, October 24th. You can get tickets at thestrandri.com. And I've always wondered, and you said, you know, Richard didn't know as he was writing this what it was going to turn into, but when did you realize that Rocky Horror was a phenomenon and that there was something going on? Was it the midnight screenings after it had been released?
I say that, yes, I think most of us found out about it at the same time, which was when I think about a year after it had started being shown as a midnight movie, there was a first anniversary birthday party held in New York. I was living in London, as was most of the people involved. And we were all invited to come to New York for a party. And they flew lots of us over. And anyone that wasn't doing other work at the time came over. It was great. And because Sue Blaine and Pat Quinn and me and Tim was working, he couldn't come, but it was great having it, because I'd like to, that Sue Blaine, of course, designed the costumes, and Brian Thompson the sets, and Jim Sharman, who wasn't there, but he, I can't tell you how much he contributed to what you all know as the Rocky Horror Picture Show and the Rocky Horror Show. He was a huge creative input in asking Richard Daley practically to come up with a song for Eddie, or a song for the Three Servants to do it with a dance. He said they need to do the special dance. And, you know, he'd come back the next day with whatever song it was that had been requested. But it was folie à trois, but it was, anyway, the five of them in the creative team are hugely responsible for what you all know as the Rocky Horror Show and the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And with all credit to Richard O'Brien, who is, of course, absolutely brilliant. But anyway, I'm so looking forward to meeting you all. So do, even if you don't dress as any of the characters, do dress up. It's a fun night, because it's really fun if you dress up and everyone's dressed up. Like, dress in whatever, you know, you can dress as a cowboy, whatever the hell you want. But it is fun seeing everyone dressed up one way or another.
And it'll
I'll go on wear those heels that you thought you'd never wear again, you know, Mr. Rogers. Put them on. Get those fishnets on. You know you love it.
And it'll make for a great photo opportunity when they get the VIP meet and greet tickets with you. So.
Oh, and also, everyone, check out my Instagram, and it's Little Nell Campbell. I think it's the same for my Facebook, but I'm so gaga right now, I wouldn't have a clue. I put photos up. I've been posting stuff, so you can get the gist of what you'll be seeing. Anyway, well, thank you. I'm winding you up because I'm now going to get ready to jump on a plane. Can you believe?
Well, we appreciate the time that you gave us. We appreciate hearing from you, and we look forward to meeting you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for being so good at putting up with me, you know, being a raving lunatic at this early hour. It's 10 o'clock, but whatever. You can take that bit out.
No, it was an absolute honor speaking with you, and we are looking forward to Rocky Horror at the Strand Thursday, October 24th. You can get your tickets now at thestrandri.com. Nell Campbell, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for keeping the spirit of Rocky Horror.
Remember, don't dream at the end.
Thank you. That is Little Nell Campbell. Again, thestrandri.com if you want to get tickets to see Rocky Horror in person with her there, and shadow casting and all the interaction, all that fun. All right, I've got to take a quick break here, and then we'll be back with the news. Stay tuned. All right, let's go into the newsroom now and get an update on all the top stories of the day from Phil Devitt.
The House Speaker leaps to Trump's defense over comments about political enemies. A weeks-long Boeing strike could be over. And at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it's about time.
From the WBSM Newsroom, this is WBSM News.
House Speaker Mike Johnson is insisting former President Trump will not use the military against his political enemies if he's elected. We get more from Scott Carr in Washington.
In a contentious interview on CNN's State of the Union, Johnson responded to recent controversial comments from Trump. Speaking with Fox News last week, Trump had suggested using the military on U.S. soil to tamp down any election chaos by what he called the enemy within, most likely posed, he said, by radical left lunatics. Johnson says what Trump actually meant is that he would deploy security forces to make American cities safer.
What he's talking about is marauding gangs of dangerous, violent people who are destroying public property.
Nope. Johnson says Americans are sick of being afraid on the streets of their cities. And if Trump were elected, he would bring order to the chaos. I'm Scott Carr in Washington.
Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says President Biden's exit from the race was not political. This week, Pelosi said her concerns about Biden's reelection bid were not about his campaign, but about him as a candidate. Pelosi added she didn't pressure Biden to drop out of the race, but did say she's never been that impressed with Biden's political operation. Senator Bernie Sanders is trying to woo undecided voters upset with the Biden administration's support for Israel. Appearing on CNN's State of the Union, the Vermont Independent claimed a Kamala Harris administration would be the best option for those who want the U.S. to help improve the humanitarian situation in Gaza amid the Israel-Hamas war.
So if we are able to elect Harris, I think we're going to have an opportunity to move her on that issue, to make it clear we cannot allow children in Gaza to starve to death.
Sanders' comments come as many Democrats are concerned about large Muslim American populations in critical states such as Michigan, who've long been outspoken about Israeli treatment of Palestinians. Israel's war in Gaza has so far killed at least 42,000 Palestinians. Boeing has reached a tentative deal with its machinists union that could end a weeks-long strike. The new contract would include a 35% wage increase over the next 4 years, higher 401k contributions, guaranteed payouts and a bonus program, and a higher signing bonus. Members of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers will vote to ratify the deal on Wednesday. And the 2024 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony is in the books. The event was held Saturday night at the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in Cleveland. This year's Hall of Fame class included Mary J. Blige, Cher, Foreigner, Peter Frampton, Kool & the Gang, Dave Matthews Band, Ozzy Osbourne, and A Tribe Called Quest. In addition, Jimmy Buffett, MC5, Dionne Warwick, and Norman Whitfield were honored for musical excellence. Big Mama Thornton, Alexis Corner, and John Mayall were recognized for their musical influence. The 5.5-hour event streamed live on Disney+. ABC plans to air a special on the induction ceremony in January.
WBSM Sports.
Well, the Patriots are still searching for answers after dropping their sixth in a row. The Pats were topped by the Jacksonville Jaguars 32-16 at Wembley Stadium in London. They host the New York Jets in Week 8. And Banner 18 about to take its rightful place in the rafters at TD Garden. Celtics celebrating their 18th championship for the final time before the new regular season begins Tuesday with the New York Knicks. The Bruins close out their three-game road trip tomorrow night. They're facing the Nashville Predators.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
Today will be an uncommonly warm, sun-filled day here on the South Coast. Temperatures topping out in the upper 70s, close to a record high of 81 set in 1920. Winds pick up in the afternoon, an elevated fire risk. Tonight, clearer, lows in the 50s, more sun on Tuesday and Wednesday, with temperatures once again in the 70s. This WBSM News Update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy, only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's news talk station, WBSM. Get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
It's okay if you don't know how to do the time warp, because they'll tell you how.
It's just a jump to the left.
Then what?
With your hands on your hips.
And, of course, that is probably the most popular song from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So, and you'll get the chance to do the time warp if you go to it. Again, thestrandri.com if you want to try to get tickets. So one of the big stories of last week was the incident that happened with Patriots defenseman Christian Barmore getting pulled over by the Providence police. We saw the footage, the body cam footage came out, and you know he was definitely being kind of aggressive in his manners toward the police. And then he posts on Twitter after the fact, just experienced for the first time five Providence cops being very unprofessional, racism at its finest. And the police union called for him to issue an apology because they said they didn't do anything wrong. They reviewed the footage and they felt like everything was done by the book. And so he's actually now issued an apology on social media. And he said, a few days have gone by since the incident with the Providence police, and I have had a chance to deeply reflect on my behavior. I want everyone to know that I'm sorry and I take full accountability for my actions. I apologize to the Providence Police Department, my teammates, and my family. My mother was a police officer, and I understand the pressures related to the job, which I didn't make any easier by reacting in the manner that I did. I am using this as an opportunity to learn and do better. I've already met with members of the Providence Police Department to apologize in person. It is my hope that they accept my sincere apology. That meeting is just the first step of many that I am taking on the route to self-improvement. And Michael Amondi, the president of the Providence Fraternal Order of Police, said the Providence FOP appreciates Mr. Barmore taking responsibility for the actions of that evening and for the apology offered to the officers involved and the PPD. Mr. Barmore took the high road, and that's commendable. And Police Chief Colonel Oscar Perez told WPRI 12 News that they had a productive conversation and that he appreciates Barmore's genuine apology. As the chief, I believe in accountability and growth, and I believe we can put this matter behind us, Perez said. So there, and you know, I was listening to Boston Sports Radio the other day talking about this, and the hosts were being very critical of Barmore because he was on the phone with his mother when he was being pulled over. And so they were criticizing him and saying, oh, you know, what a mommy's boy. You know, he's a grown adult. He doesn't know what to do when he has an interaction with police. He's got to call his mom. And this explains why he was on the phone with his mother. She's a police officer. He's probably asking her, Mom, what do I do in this situation to make sure it doesn't escalate? Because, you know, young black men have a concern about being pulled over by the police. So it was probably less about a 25-year-old man needing his mommy and probably more about, Mom, as a police officer, tell me what I should be expecting here. And maybe that's why he was, quote unquote, slow rolling to pull over, because he wanted to get her on the phone first and ask her what to do. But he did the right thing here in the end, and he issued an apology. And I think all sides can just move on from this. I mean, it'd be one thing if the officers were seen on camera being at all aggressive or treating him differently. And it was probably one of the most by-the-book stops you'll see. Now, whether or not he feels they were right to pull him over is a different story, but you had expired tags. Your plate was expired. So it might have been the tinted windows that caught their attention, and people feel that's profiling, but then they ran your plate and your plate came up expired. So I guess, you know, now they'll just kind of move on from that, and hopefully he can get back on the field at some point too, because God, the Patriots need him. As bad as things have been, now the defense is falling apart too. But you know what? It's still exciting to listen to the game. I still was fired up listening to it on the radio from the big plays that Drake May was able to pull off. And really, it's not having a rookie quarterback that's causing them to lose. It's the fact that the rest of the team can't pull their weight. You've got guys that are barely NFL players on the offensive line. But the Patriots didn't get back to winning ways against the Jaguars. In fact, it was a bit of an embarrassing performance in which their coach, Gerard Mayo, called the team soft. So how will the soft 1-6 New England Patriots, who are clearly struggling, respond this week when they get to face another team going through problems, their rivals, the New York Jets? The Patriots host Aaron Rodgers and the 2-5 Jets at Gillette Stadium on Sunday. And we will have the game for you right here. Kickoff is at 1 p.m. with pregame on WBSM beginning at 10 a.m. And, of course, the New England Patriots all season long right here on WBSM. Why don't I take my next break here, and we'll be back in just a few moments. 508-996-0500. Welcome back in. David Bowie there with I'm Afraid of Americans from the Earthling album. Great album. Great follow-up, too, to Outside, which has my favorite Bowie song, The Heart's Filthy Lesson. But I guess there's a lesson being learned by that guy in Hanson, or I'm assuming it's a guy, but the person in Hanson who is projecting the Trump image onto the town of Hanson water tower. Because that person is being fined. Well, I'm assuming it's a guy because they're calling him Mr. X. But he is being fined $100 a day because he continues to project it. And the town continues to shine a spotlight on it to try to wash it out because political messaging doesn't belong on town-owned property. And yesterday, a large group of people gathered to support what he's doing. And they took donations to help pay the fines. That $100 a day fine that he is gathering. And there are people who are commenting on this and saying, you know, they want to come out and support this guy because it's his right to be able to do this. Well, it's not. We had this person asked to remain anonymous, but we got an Snapchat message that says, no violation because the projector was on private property. No, that's not true. Doesn't matter where the projector is. You're projecting the image onto town-owned property. And it doesn't belong there. The same way if it was a Kamala Harris message, the Trump supporters would have been up in arms about it. So you can't say that it's okay when it's the person that you prefer when it's against the law. So I don't know why a group of people felt the need to go stand outside and support this guy. He's breaking the law. And you're trying to raise money to support that? And don't give me that, well, you know, it's a stupid law anyway because it infringes on his freedom of speech, because you wouldn't be saying that if it was for the other candidate. So I don't understand the mindset here of A, the person that's doing it, and B, the people that see nothing wrong with it. So you know what? Maybe we should take up a collection from Kamala Harris supporters. And they can pay the $100 fine a day, so the $100 a day fine, so that we can project that image on the other side of the water tower. So I don't know. I think it's insane that people are defending this when it's a slippery slope that we don't want to go down to. Don't want to go down. You don't want to make it so that now anybody that has the message, you know, what are you going to say? Well, it's town-owned property, so they can put whatever they want on it. They pay taxes in town. Okay. Well, then that means anybody who pays taxes in town can start using those messages for whatever they want, those spaces for whatever messaging they want. Tomorrow, we will be joined in the 8 o'clock hour by Carlene Cordwell, who is the spokesperson and the organizer of the Harris campaign headquarters in New Bedford. We're just going to get an update on what the engagement has been with the community. I stopped in there on Saturday and was speaking with her, and they've had a lot of positive response. And she's going to come on and tell us some of the stories. And it's not just about, you know, the candidate. It's also about the fact that this is the only campaign headquarters in Massachusetts for the Harris campaign. A gentleman called here on Friday and said he had reached out to the Harris campaign and was trying to get a sign. And they ended up I forget exactly what he said happened, but the sign isn't coming for a while. And so he was like, can I get one from your local office? So I put him in touch with Carlene, and he drove down here from north of Boston. I think he was from Chelsea, drove down here on Friday and picked up two signs because there's no other campaign office closer. I mean, that's astounding to me that the Democrats would take it that for granted, that they don't need to have better representation in the state and help in organizing. 508-996-0500. Good morning. You're next on WBSM.
Hey, Tim, how you doing? Great job as usual. I did want to jump around just a bit. I wanted to comment on the Barmore issue with
sure.
him calling his mom and, you know, talk radio talking about that. The guy's a grown man. If he's got to call his mother on, he's a professional football player, millionaire, on how to deal with the police when he gets pulled over, you know, I'm sorry. I disagree with you on that one. And I also want to point out is I really think that the fact that we do have the body cams, this is exactly what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to expose, you know, exactly what happened to clear people. And I think they probably clear people more than they convict people. Or the police, anyway, of any type of bad or unprofessional behavior. His allegations were, can you imagine if we didn't have body cameras and this particular incident, we'd still be talking about how unprofessional the Providence police are to black and Latino or brown people.
But going back to his calling his mother, you don't think that the fact that his mother was a police officer makes a difference in why he was calling her?
No, I don't. He's a grown man.
But that being a grown man doesn't have anything to do with anything.
Because I think he knows how to deal with police officers while getting pulled over, at least.
Why do you think that?
I don't think he needs the help of his mother when he's a grown man, 30-some years old, millionaire, making life
or death,
decisions, life decisions. He's going to call his mom because he got pulled over? Come on.
So you never had to reach out to your parents for advice on anything?
One thing I would never do is call my parents when I'm getting pulled over by the police.
Well, you're two different people, so I guess...
That is true. That totally true. Well, you would think I am, right? You've never met me. You might be making an assumption.
I'm just assuming, based on your caller ID, that you're not Christian Barmore. So that's why I'm saying you're two different people.
Yeah, that's true. But that's just me. I just think that thank God we had body cameras in this case because it exposed who the person was that wasn't telling the truth.
All right.
And who had the poor behavior. And I doubt his mother gave him advice to act like that if she was a police officer. So if he is calling his mother,
I think he acted that way in spite of whatever advice she was giving him.
Exactly. So it just goes to show what kind of person Barmore is.
All right. Thank you for the call. Have a good day.
All right.
I got to take a break. A lot of assumptions made there. I got to take a break. We'll be right back.
With a knife to open up the sky's veins, some things will never change. They stand there looking backward, half unconscious from the pain. They may seem rearranged. In the backwater swirling,
and that's going to do it for me for today.